Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Yeah, Tuesday. What's up? Welcome in. Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. Thanks for making the show part of your day. We're excited about our rundown today. Brian Baldinger is going to be with us at 10:30. And at 1 o'clock today, Aaron Schatz of Football Outsiders will also be on. Both of those guys to break down the National Football League after week two officially in the books. Danny, last night the Raiders fell behind 17-7 at their brand new stadium. They come roaring back and outscore New Orleans 27-7 the rest of the way. They beat them going away and get their first win in Vegas.
So, you know, I'm watching as we all do. It's 17-7. I do the move where I, you know, have to get my youngest in bed, and we're doing bath and shower time and just sort of winding down the day. And I come back downstairs to check it, and I did one of those hacky 80s, like early 90s movies, like double take, like shake your head real fast. I couldn't believe it. It was 17-7. I thought we were on cruise control. The Saints, good. Raiders, you know, the occasional Josh Jacobs outburst against the Carolina Panthers, but come on. What are we really talking about? What we're talking about is the Raiders putting up, 27 unanswered points at one point maybe? Man, was that impressive. That was awesome. What a fun group. And they should try to throw the ball to Darren Waller sometimes. Man, that guy's nasty.
16 targets, 12 catches last night for Waller. 103 yards and a touchdown. If you guys haven't heard his story, it's just incredible. He battled addiction. He was out of the league. He's an admitted former alcoholic. He had drug issues. And he was done. His career, despite all of his talent at Baltimore at one point in time, was dead in the water. And he made a change with some people around him helping to convince him to live life a different way and a lot of hard work on his own part and in his own right. And he got back into the NFL, initially on the Raiders practice squad. They see that the guy can actually do it and play, and they elevate him to the active roster, and the rest is history. Last year, he caught 90 balls. Last night, he caught 12. He's got 18 catches through two games already. And if you watch their offense, it kind of runs through him as a passing game. And they've got speed now in Henry Ruggs to try to clear things out underneath for him. And they've got a couple decent wide receivers. Brian Edwards, who they drafted, had two catches for 42 yards last night, made a great contested catch on one of the better corners in the league, Marshawn Lattimore. But it's the Darren Waller passing game. And Derek Carr, for that matter, looked great. 282 yards, three touchdowns. He was 28 of 38, very, very efficient last night. They've got a smart offense they put together. You know, John Gruden's a bit of a dinosaur in terms of some of his antiquated ways of thinking, but it's pretty clear he has updated his file when you watch the way they operate. And maybe the thing that makes the whole offense work, Danny, the straw that stirs that drink, Josh Jacobs is easily a top 10 running back in football. With all the injuries, I mean, the rest of the way, if he stays healthy, he'll be a top 5 running back in football. Last night he rushed for 88 yards, was not as involved in the passing game as he normally is. He caught 3 balls for 17 yards. But that offense is humming right now. I think they averaged about 17 points a game the last 2 years. They scored 34 twice to open the season. They're 2-0.
And it wasn't just, okay, everyone's going to score against Carolina, right? Because Carolina's terrible. We know that. Defensively, they're a joke. They've been really bad for a couple years. So you kind of dismissed it maybe as an early season mirage. That Saints defense is no joke, man. That Saints defense is pretty good. And to do what they did last night was unbelievably impressive. So remember a couple years back where the – just talking about dinosaurs in football regarding John Gruden. And think what you want about him. But they came in and said, well, this team isn't very good right now. What should we do? Let's trade away our most prized commodity, Khalil Mack, who could get us 10 sacks on a crappy defense where people are going to be running the ball against us in all second halves as they salt games away. Let's get a bunch of first-round picks. How about that turns into Jacobs? How about that turns into Bryan Edwards? How about that turns into multiple players for a team that's starting to build and compete? That's what you're supposed to do. The hardcore guys, the Herm Edwards play to win the game crowd in their huge suits on television love to yell at you and tell you how stupid that was. You and I, as I recall, both go, yeah, it's smart actually. What are you going to do? You're going to have a great player on a team that's not going to win any games, or you could try to build something. Here they are building something. A number of players they got out of that deal, and as they started to build the way that they want their culture and stuff, you're seeing the results, man. Way to open the new stadium. Very cool.
Yeah, they got crushed for it. 4-12 in his first season. Almost by design. That's what you should do. Be bad. Be as bad as possible and stockpile as many picks as possible. Last year they made a jump to 7-9. There was a little bit of disappointment, I think, nationally about them because maybe they could have been a game or two better, let a couple games get away. But that's a pretty nice improvement. Year one, you win 4 games. Year two, you win 7 games. And here they are in year 3 under John Gruden, off to a 2-0 start with one of the better offenses in football. On the other side of things, your losers last night, the New Orleans Saints. Weird stat. This is one of the best teams in the NFC every single year. They're a favorite to play in the Super Bowl, and one of the top 2 or 3 teams in their conference annually.
Annual.
They haven't been 2-0 since 2013. Just a weird thing.
Isn't that weird?
Like, they lose in week 2 every single year, and that continued last night. The story is Drew Brees. So, having watched him like you did against Tampa Bay, they win going away. A lot of things worked for them offensively, but the one thing they didn't have at all was any element of a downfield passing game. And that doesn't mean, like, people hear downfield passing game, they just think home run ball down the sideline. And that's not necessarily what you're talking about. You know, driving the ball into between the numbers on a dig route, 15, 18, 20 yards. They don't have a lot of that in this offense. Last night, forget arm strength or throwing the ball down the field, even on stuff at the line of scrimmage. Drew Brees was inaccurate. It was the worst he's looked in a long, long time. His numbers in the end, 26 of 38 for 312, look a lot better because they scored late. But he was 50% passing most of the way through the third quarter with most of his throws 10 yards and in. He was like 6 of 12 on those throws. He looked terrible last night.
Yeah, none of what we're seeing right now changes the fact that this is one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. And the instant he says, that's it for me, a space shuttle should come to his place and take him to Canton, Ohio, and they should put the bust up. Incredible, amazing career, superstar, great story when no one else wanted him. Him and Sean Payton made beautiful music together. I said this after week 1, and I'm saying it now. He is washed. I understand now more the Taysom Hill thing. I don't agree with it necessarily. I think they're trying to make fetch happen in terms of that gimmick and things, but they wanted an insurance policy. Drew Brees can't do it, and the league knows it. It's not even the downfield stuff that you're talking about, because you're right. I mean, that's never really been where their bread's been buttered there in New Orleans. It's been great design, throwing to Kamara, throwing to backs, throwing to Marcus Colston years ago, Jimmy Graham. Now they got Michael Thomas. Their offense runs through him. But Brees, it is inaccurate. It's like this. He's got to wind up to make a very basic throw that a lot of college kids can do right now in terms of like a 10-yard this or a hitch or square in or an arrow route, whatever it is. He just doesn't have that unbelievable touch where it looks like he could walk out there and hand it to somebody, and it just doesn't look right at this point. I know the numbers ended up being fine, as you kind of touched on. That, to me, is a bunch of prevent defense, yards after the catch, Kamara lateness and everything else, but he just doesn't look right at this point. And I kind of see – I don't know what happened between the end of last year and this offseason, but whatever it is, I think it happened, man.
Yeah, so when I stop short of saying he's washed, because I guess I don't really know what that means. Like, if the question is he still what he once was, the answer is obviously no. I mean, nobody would refute that. I think we've known that. Generally, at the end of each of these seasons, he loses some zip, and his arm, with all the throws, kind of just wears down like a pitcher by the end of the season. Mm-hmm. And you're seeing that version of him here at the start of the year, which gives me a lot of worry and concern that if it just trends down from here, you know, it's going to be flat out bad by the end of the year. But I think he's still going to be able to operate this offense with their weapons enough that they're going to go 10-6 or 11-5 or something like that. So when you say he's washed, do you just mean like this is his final season and he doesn't have a whole lot left? Because I think most people would agree with that. But I feel like that might have been kind of what they expected coming in as well. They went and got Jameis Winston. They paid Taysom Hill a bunch of money. We saw Drew Brees at the end of last year in that playoff game against Minnesota, among other outings, kind of scuffle. But when you say he's washed, what does that mean?
It's a little bit nebulous because his, you know, 25-30% for the sake of just arbitrary numbers is better than some guys, you know, at maximum at this point. He's better than some of these young quarterbacks that are really struggling. I mean, he can't do it at a high level anymore. I mean that he is so limited that they've got to coach around him at this point. That's what I mean. I think defensive coordinators are now licking their chops. I think they're now feasting. I mean, as evidenced by his skill set last night, right? He's not terribly accurate. He can't throw the football down the field, but he still wasn't sacked at all. So he's still got the brains and acumen that he's had forever, where he knows where your pressure's coming from. He knows your scheme better than you do. He knows, you know, who, what, where, when, why, how to slide the protection, move his feet, throw the football away, and all that kind of stuff. So in that sense, he'll be useful. I'm talking about the physical tools that it takes to be a good quarterback in this league. He doesn't have anymore. And it's like, awkward to watch at this point. Because, again, I know what the numbers say, 26 for 38 for 312. I'd be doing spin kicks if Dwayne Haskins did that. But this is different. If you watched him, you know what it looks like when he's not even close to guys. And this is Mr. 72% accuracy. This is a guy that is, if you tell him to hit the exit sign, he'll ask you which letter, Greg Maddux style. That's gone. I guess that's what I mean.
Yeah, which I think a lot of people would agree with. When I hear washed, I think like, He can't do it to the point where they're going to be bad this year. And I don't think that's the case necessarily. I think you saw they got off to a 17-7 start in this game where he struggled, where he was okay in the first half and they were up by 10. You know, their big problem last night, Brees was not good, but their defense also, to your point earlier about the Raiders, had no answers for Vegas. And on
top
of that,
Marshawn
Lattimore, who's a really good corner, had a terrible game. Malcolm Jenkins, mm-hmm. who's supposed to be a really good safety, had a bad game. So they got a bunch to sort out. Sean Payton, Drew Brees were kind of talking as if they're just not ready yet. They're nowhere near where they should be. Maybe another victim of not having your typical build-up exhibition-type season. We're Grant and Danny. You're listening to The Fan. As I mentioned, Brian Baldinger joins us today at 11:30. We are jacked up about that. Next, we will recap Sunday's games, the first batch of contests to go through as we look back at Week 2 of the NFL season on G&D. You're locked into The Fan. Guys, Grant Paulson from my friends at Lindsay Chevrolet. I've been telling you about Lindsay Chevy for a while. I'm a Lindsay Chevy guy. My buddy Paul Smith is the GM over there. He's a huge listener to the show. He takes great care of me, great care of my family. And he's told me, you guys tell him when you get over there that you're listeners, you're 106.7 fans. He's going to take great care of you as well. Let's not forget, they got huge discounts no matter who you are. New Chevy Silverados, heavy and light duty trucks, over 800 new Chevys available. Up to $15,000 off. Camaros, Malibus, Traxes, up to $8,000 off. Equinoxers, Blazers, Traverses, up to $8,000 off. If you take it from me, you're going to love it. Ed Lindsay is someone who's got, probably four cars from them over the last bunch of years now. While you're there, be sure to ask not only for Paul Smith, but for those Love It Lindsay prices. They're making the deals right now that other dealerships can't or won't make. Shop now, lindsaychevy.com. Or go into Lindsay Chevy in Woodbridge. You'll love it at Lindsay. Find new roads. G&D 106.7, The Fan, Week 2 in the NFL in the books after last night's Monday night tilt between the New Orleans Saints and the Vegas Raiders. So let's hit rewind, get you back to recaps of all of the action. This is a good segment for you if you're into fantasy football. You get all your numbers and things to look forward to moving forward. But we wait till Tuesdays because Monday is going to be dominated by the Washington football outfit. So let's get right to it. We will start at Soldier Field in Chicago. The Bears beat the Giants 17-13. Mitch Trubisky, 190 yards, two touchdowns, two picks. Running back David Montgomery runs for 82 catches, a touchdown. Allen Robinson, a quiet game after a loud week off the field. Just three catches on nine targets for 33 yards. Khalil Mack had one of the Bears' four sacks. Giants take over the game after losing Saquon Barkley, scoring the final 13 points. Daniel Jones, 25 of 40 for 241. Two turnovers, though. Lost a fumble, threw a pick when Evan Engram fell down at the top of his route. Engram did go 6 for 65, but the Bears hold on.
Bears are 2-0, but it's one of those, are they 2-0? They beat a couple teams that aren't terribly impressive. And, you know, in one, they come back against Detroit, and the other, they sort of hold on for dear life. No points in the second half. But the Giants' defense, pretty good again. Kept them in the football game. Just offensively, not quite enough against Chicago. Obviously, the story of this one is no Saquon Barkley. The ACL just stinks. He left the game earlier, what looked like either a hyperextension or an elbow injury, arm injury, and it was like a play or two later, ends up with that ACL. Montgomery left the game as well, by the way. It came down really hard on his head, kind of a topsy-turvy injury there, but came back to have a really nice game as well. Montgomery's pretty dynamic, and I wish they would do a little bit less of Tariq Cohen. They just paid him a bunch of money. And David Montgomery is good. That's their best asset along with Allen Robinson at this point. But Chicago, 2-0.
Cowboys in front of some fans in Dallas at home, 40-39 winners over the Atlanta Falcons. They are the first of 441 teams to win when their opponent scored 39 points and didn't turn the ball over. 1-440 now, teams facing that scenario. They came back from down 20-0 and 26-7. Dak Prescott, a legendary effort, 450 yards on 34 of 47 passing, rushed for three touchdowns. Ezekiel Elliott ran for 89 and a touch. CeeDee Lamb goes for a bill for the first time. The Rook, 6 for 106. Amari Cooper, 6 for 100. Introducing Dalton Schultz, like one of those movie posters, starring, and introducing. Schultz, 9 for 88 with Jeff Schwartz now hurt. He's going to take over for them. A touchdown. Atlanta got 273 yards, four touchdowns from Matt Ryan in the loss. Calvin Ridley was the dude in the passing game for them. 10 targets, 7 catches for a buck 09 and 2. Hayden Hurst, 72 yards and a touchdown. How about the Falcons? Like 500-ish yards and 39 points, and Julio Jones had two grabs for 24 yards as he was ailing.
Yeah, the chokiest chokes that ever choked. Julio Jones dropped a touchdown pass in this one. And that probably would have won them the game. Now, you'd also like to say that 39 points should have won you the game. You'd like to say that standing around near an onside kick and maybe somebody just falling on it, kicking it out of bounds, or something would have won them the game. They find ways to lose. It's unbelievable. It's irresponsible they lost that football game up 26-7 at one point. But Dallas early was terrible in this game. There was a fumble by Zeke Elliott, who rarely does that. Dak Prescott had himself a pick and also a fumble. No picks, rather, but he lost a bad fumble as well in this one, but ended up rushing, as you said, for three touchdowns to go with a boatload of yards. Their offense is really good, Dallas's, and they've got plenty of weapons to spare. But this story to me is Atlanta and how ridiculous they were. They did everything you possibly could to win a game and then lose a game also, going for two when there was no need to do so. They don't get it. Ends up being the margin of victory. But a wild one in Dallas for sure.
To add just to the fumble thing for a second, the Cowboys fumbled three times and fumbled two other times when they were ruled to have been down. All in the first quarter. It was crazy. Like every other play, they were fumbling.
Right.
And somehow they come back to win the game. The Packers at Lambeau Field doubled up the Lions, 42-21. Detroit led 14-3, and then everything fell off the rails for them. Aaron Rodgers was good as always, 242 yards and two touchdowns. But the story was the other Aaron, Jones, who was the best non-quarterback in football this weekend. He ran for a buck 68 and two. Added four catches for 68 yards and a third touchdown. For Rodgers, eight different guys catch a pass. Nobody caught more than four balls. I mean, he was spreading it around in this game. The Packers, 488 yards. They score 40 for the second time in as many weeks. For Detroit, Adrian Peterson, back-to-back games where he led them in rushing, did so with only eight carries this past week. He's been effective since they brought him in.
Yeah, if you need someone to run it on early downs, that's your guy. I mean, he could still do that. It's amazing. He's basically smacking the aging curve right in the face. But it's the classic, oh my God, will you make a decision backfield. Seven carries for Peterson, eight carries for Kerryon Johnson, five carries for DeAndre Swift, who was also targeted five times. Detroit stinks, and that's where we are. Again, I thought they'd be better. They're not. They find ways to lose. They're not particularly good. Their defense is reprehensibly bad. But again, the Packers are kind of the story here. Aaron Jones this week. Davante Adams left the game a couple different times over. I think if it was a closer game, he would have stayed in based on what I'm seeing and reading and hearing. But that's the key. For Green Bay and their offense, which, by the way, has put up a million points and yards through a couple games, if you find someone else to go with Davante Adams, someone to take the pressure off so they can't just load up there, this offense could still move because Aaron Rodgers is still great. And yesterday, or Sunday rather, it was Aaron Jones. What a show he put on.
Colts pound the Vikings 28-11. Jonathan Taylor's first start, a smashing success for the Wisconsin product. 26 attempts for 101 yards and a touchdown. Also caught both of the passes thrown to him. Phil Rivers only threw for 214 yards. He didn't really have to do much. It was just an easy-going game for the Colts. Mo Alie-Cox, the former basketball player at VCU, ate Minnesota's lunch, five grabs for 111 yards. I think most of those were on the exact same corner route against zone where he just got in between the corner and the safety and made over-the-shoulder catches. But as bad as the Vikings' defense was, their offense was worse. Kirk Cousins is going to want to burn this film. It was a stinker. 11 of 26, 113 yards, three interceptions. One of them was a Hail Mary at the end of the half. But it doesn't matter. It was just a gross game for him, completely inaccurate. And the whole offense, and the whole team is right now bad. The Vikings are 0-2, and they got a tough matchup with the Tennessee Titans this week. They are in trouble. Old 49er D lineman, DeForest Buckner, 1.5 sacks for the Colts, who traded a first-round pick for him.
Minnesota's terrible, and I was dead wrong. I thought they would compete and ultimately win that division. They are among the worst teams in football right now. You touched on it. Cousins has had a couple of these games over the course of his career. I think like Thursday Night Football against the Giants, one of those comes to mind. But this is in contention for his worst of all time, a 15.9 rating. Not quite Hasselbeckian with the 0.0, but might as well have been. He was terrible. They couldn't do anything on offense, which really surprises me because it's not like Dalvin Cook turned into somebody else. It's not like Adam Thielen turned into somebody else. They've got enough to move the football, and they couldn't. Colts needed this bounce back after a weird week one loss to Jacksonville, who we now know isn't terrible. But the Colts kind of get right here. You mentioned Taylor. He's a star. He's excellent. Just watching how he moves around, you could tell when some guy has it, that guy has it. They needed, you know, a little bit more, kind of another option outside of T.Y. Hilton. Enter Mo Alie-Cox, who I thought was sensational in this game. Big and physical and strong, making all the plays. But to me, the story is how bad Minnesota is on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, they absolutely stink to start the season. They got 14 games left, but they're going to need to make up for a bad start. Next, we'll get into the Buffalo Bills and Josh Allen looking like an MVP. San Francisco is a mash unit right now, and the Eagles didn't play any better against the Rams than they did against Washington. What does that mean for Philly? You're listening to Grant and Danny. We're recapping week two in the NFL. We are recapping week two of the NFL season on Grant and Danny, about halfway through Sunday's action. We'll get into which week two injury is going to loom largest for the team that suffered it. Coming up at 10:45 and at 11 o'clock, we can revisit some of our survival and our confidence point picks from the weekend. Let's get to Miami, where the Bills beat the Dolphins 31-28. There was a lengthy break in this game for Lightning at one point in time. They had a delay. In the end, Josh Allen elevated his game, 417 yards and four touchdowns, tacked on 18 rushing. Stephon Diggs has helped change this offense. You can see the Vikings are missing his vertical threat. Well, he has added something to the Bills. 8 for 153 in a touch. He was targeted 13 times. John Brown also getting open deep. 4 catches, 82 yards. In fact, Danny, three different Bills receivers had catches of 45 or longer in this game.
Josh Allen, man, playmaker. There are guys. There's a long list of guys I would trust more. Let's call it third and eight, you know, to deliver the ball into a tight window or make the right read or whatever. But that's not his game. His game is to run around. His game is to throw the ball deep and far with arm strength. And he is a big dude that can run around. He is a playmaker, man. He's got a lot of the Cam Newton when he was MVP mold when they went to a Super Bowl. He looked awesome. Story of this game to me is the Bills, end up, you know, having a commanding lead. Looks like they're going to win the game handily. Next thing you know, Miami is able to mount a lot of offense. They come back and actually take a fourth quarter lead. It took a couple Bills drives down the stretch there to seal the deal, including an incredible diving catch from Gabriel Davis, I believe. Another great play by Allen, by the way, scrambling away from pressure and throwing it to where only his guy could catch it. But the Bills' defense let up a little bit more than you'd like to think. That was going to be the strength of their team. But, yeah, Stephon Diggs has transformed that offense. They're fun.
524 yards for the 2-0 Bills. And by the way, Mike Gesicki, the tight end for the Dolphins, is available in about half of Yahoo Fantasy Leagues. 11 targets, 8 catches, 130 yards, and a touchdown. He's worth grabbing. 49ers have worse injury problems than everybody else. They still beat the Jets 31-13. You never see this. Raheem Mostert took the first play from scrimmage 80 yards for a touchdown without getting touched. Okay, Jet did not put a finger on him on the first play from scrimmage as he ran to the end zone for 80 yards. I don't know that I can remember seeing that. Jet McKinnon, 3 for 77 in the touchdown. Jimmy Garoppolo was rolling. This was one of those games where you pad your stats and you look great against the Jets. And then he got hurt and he couldn't keep doing it. But he was 14 of 16 for 131 yards, 2 touchdowns. Nick Mullins came in, went 8 of 11 for 71 yards, did throw a pick. And congratulations to Jordan Reed. He looked like Jordan Reed again. 2 touchdowns, 7 catches, 50 yards without George Kittle playing. They lost Bosa. They lost Mostert to injury. They lost Jimmy G, who's now questionable this week. For the Jets, the only thing that stands out to me is that this is the most Frank Gore stat line I've ever seen in my life. I don't understand how he's still in the NFL, but whatever. He had 21 rushes for 63 yards. I can't even believe that that's still a thing. But
you got to establish the run. I don't know what your problem is with that. I mean, if you don't establish it, how are you supposed to salt games away? How could the Jets possibly have won that game without getting enough rushing attempts to Frank Gore?
How did he get 21 carries in a game where they lost 31-13 and were losing the entire game? I don't understand that.
They gave up, and they're the worst team in the NFL. The story of this game, you touched on Mostert going to the house. He ended up actually like pulling up lame, and he leaves, and they gave the football to McKinnon and Tevin Coleman and company. Tevin Coleman, by the way, 14 carries for 12 yards. Pretty good signing. Here's the story of this game to me. 3rd and 31, the 49ers are ready to just punt the football because the game's over. They do a give-up handoff, and the Jets gave up a first down.
Yeah.
This is who they are. They're going to pick first. They got a choice to make. Is it Darnold one more time or one of the quarterbacks? The Jets.
Well, Darnold's great, remember? Darnold's really good. Everyone's been telling us for a couple of years. Doesn't matter that he's not performing. There's just certain guys that people just decide are really good. Rams 37, Eagles 19. Jared Goff. He needs to bounce back this year. We all agree. I mean, he had a bad year last year. 267 and 3 looks the part. Tyler Higbee caught 3 touchdowns. Cooper Kupp, 1 week after not being that involved. Team highs, targets 6, catches 5, yards 81. Last week in the backfield, it was Malcolm Brown. Everyone rushed to pick him up in fantasy. This week, it was Daryl Henderson. He goes for 12 and 81 in a touchdown. And Carson Wentz didn't improve this week. Picked off 2 more times, still struggled. Good news for the Eagles was that Miles Sanders comes back, and Miles Sanders ran for 95 in a touch and caught 3 for 36. But the Rams are 2-0, and the Eagles are 0-2.
Look at some of the rush attempts, too, by the way. Cooper Kupp had 2 carries. Robert Woods had 3 carries and a touchdown. This is what the Rams are. And it makes
galore.
Them really hard to prepare for. So, you know, remember, like, all the years of fantasy owners just getting so irate at Mike Shanahan or Bill Belichick? Because it's like each week it's Olandis Gary, then it was Ryan Terrain, then it was somebody else. Well, this is what the Rams are going to do, but with everybody. Right? 1 week it's going to be Robert Woods, and he only had a couple targets this week. This week it was, you know, Cooper Kupp getting a bunch of targets and looks, and it's going to be Malcolm Brown, but he left with a fractured pinky. Then it was Darrell Henderson. Then it was Cam Akers, but he got hurt. They're going to spread it around. They've always got one more option than you've got the ability to cover, and it's up to Jared Goff to get the football to the right spot. Tyler Higbee, massive day in fantasy as well. A great throwback, one of those things that I don't know why more teams don't use it. Every action going to the right, Higbee kind of looks like he's lost. Rolling down the field like Billy Bob, turns around, catches the touchdown. Beautiful. The Rams throttled the Eagles.
That's a Kyle Shanahan play. I was once in Mobile, Alabama, in a conference room when he drew that up on a chalkboard for me. He calls it tight end leak. Sean McVay has taken it and perfected it. Steelers 26, Broncos 21 in Pittsburgh. James Conner goes for 106 and a touch. He had a 59-yard run in the game. I didn't even know he had that left in him. Big Ben, 311 yards and 2 touchdowns. Deontay Johnson, 8 catches for 92 yards. Chase Claypool caught an 84-yard touchdown. T.J. Watt, 2.5 sacks. He's tied with Chase Young with 2.5 for the NFL lead through 2 weeks. Drew Lock suffers a shoulder injury. Cortland Sutton lost for the season. 3 grabs, 66 yards for him.
Denver was frisky. I was impressed with their comeback in this game. Not quite enough. Pittsburgh did just enough to win. I love Chase Claypool so much. And you saw what Pittsburgh's offense can be in this one against a decent Denver D. I was impressed with both teams, frankly.
Bucks, 2 touchdown winners, 31-17 over the Panthers. Tom Brady, Mike Evans hook up for a touchdown. Evans, 10 targets, 7 catches, 104 yards. Brady, 25 completions for 217 yards, a touchdown and a pick. They put the game away with Leonard Fournette going to the crib from 46. He went for 100 on just 12 carries in his second game in Tampa Bay. 2 sacks for Ndamukong Suh. Carolina loses Christian McCaffrey for a month. Teddy Bridgewater, big numbers, 367, couple of interceptions. I mean, he was just throwing a lot. They were behind. But how about 23 combined targets for the tandem of DJ Moore, who had 8 catches for 120 yards, and Robbie Anderson, who had 9 for 109. Matt Rhule's offense moves the ball. He's just got a terrible defense.
Yeah, I think I agree with all of that. And losing McCaffrey for a couple weeks isn't going to help. Defensively, Carolina's an embarrassment. Them and Atlanta are going to vie for among the worst defenses in the sport right there in the same division. Ronald Jones and Tom Brady had a muffed exchange on a shotgun handoff, and it was basically the Leonard Fournette show. After that, you mentioned it. He had one really long run, a 46-yarder, but 12 for 103 and a couple touchdowns for the Jags castoff.
Titans survived the Jaguars 33-30. Tennessee on the verge of pulling away a couple times, up 21-7 and 30-17. Jacksonville keeps on digging. Ryan Tannehill threw 4 touchdowns, 2 of them to Jonnu Smith, his tight end, who had 84 yards in the game. Derrick Henry was completely held in check. 25 attempts for 84 yards. Tennessee squeaks out a second win in as many weeks for Jacksonville. Gardner Minshew, 339-3, a deceiving 2 interceptions. The first of them was on target for a guy about 12 yards downfield, and a rookie who's 6'6" jumped up to try to catch the ball and batted it into the air. It wasn't intended for him. Then another was batted at the line. Minshew's playing great football. Touchdowns for Keelan Cole and Tyler Eifert.
James Robinson out of Illinois State. I don't think anyone would have that in the office pool, over 100 yards. I'm going to keep beating this drum. Jay Gruden can coordinate offense. That offense is coordinated by Jay Gruden. They got weapons. They got guys in space. They got guys running jet sweep this. Chris Thompson leaking out of the backfield that for a touchdown catch. They got Chark. They got Cole. They got Conley. They got Gardner Minshew, James Robinson. They drafted Laviska Shenault. That offense is going to be fun all year long. Jacksonville's been in a couple shootouts, man. I'm enjoying it.
Ravens 33, Texans 16. Baltimore outrushes Houston 230-51. Edwards 73 yards, Ingram 55 yards, Jackson 54 yards. He throws for 204 and a touchdown. Deshaun Watson 275 and a touch in the game. For the Ravens, Hollywood Brown, their leading receiver, 42 yards. It was that kind of game. They just literally kept the ball on the ground and never had to throw it, and that was fine.
If you can do that, do that. Right? People want to yell about running the ball and establishing things. If you could run it like the Ravens do and did in that game, run it as often as you would like, sir. That team is the best in the NFL right now, in my humble opinion. For Houston, kind of the same story, right? Asking Deshaun Watson to play hero ball, make some amazing plays, just not enough available to him. And defensively, Houston's not particularly good either. This could get ugly.
Two more quick ones here. Chiefs, Chargers. We talked a lot about this yesterday. 33-30 in overtime. Justin Herbert finds out he's going to start a minute before the game. He goes out and throws for 300 yards and helps take the Chiefs to overtime. In the end, though, Patrick Mahomes, 300 yards, 2 touchdowns, 54 rushing, too much. Best play of this game. There was a 3rd and 20 late, and Mahomes scrambled for 21 because, of course, he did.
He's so great. He really is so great. Chargers kicking themselves probably should have won this game. Got outscored in the 4th quarter, 11-3, a standard football score you see all the time. But the Chargers had this one in hand, and you got Mahomes. That happens.
Finally, Seahawks 35, Patriots 30. Came down to the final play. Cam Newton, who had 2 rushing touchdowns in the game and 4 on the season, stopped trying to get off tackle. Russell Wilson, 5 passing touchdowns. He's got 9 touchdowns and 11 incompletions on the season. His 5 touchdowns to 5 different receivers. DK Metcalf goes for 92. Tyler Lockett for 67. Chris Carson ran for 72. Jamal Adams, 10 tackles and a sack for Seattle in the game.
Cam Newton was incredible in this game, and they probably should have won it there at the end if they'd given him some kind of pass option to go with that goal line carry. A couple rushing touchdowns, threw for one, threw for almost 400 yards. I can't believe nobody else offered him a contract.
So there you go. There's your Week 2 breakdown. on Grant and Danny. Which injury will hurt the team that suffered it the most? Next, right here on The Fan. Yesterday, the NFL levied $1 million in fines to coaches who weren't wearing their masks correctly. Vic Fangio of the Broncos, Pete Carroll, Seahawks, Kyle Shanahan, San Francisco, $100,000 apiece for not wearing masks at all for parts of Sunday's games, according to Adam Schefter. In addition, the league fined each coach's teams $250,000 apiece, according to Schefter's sources. $1.05 million in punishments came a week after the league sent a memo to all the teams reinforcing the requirements that coaches needed to wear coverings over their mouths and noses at all times on the sidelines. You'll feel that a little bit. I know those guys make millions of dollars, but $100,000 is $100,000.
Yeah, you see, it was a great moment last night where Gruden just instinctively is trying to yell at somebody. And he like snapped his mask down to yell and then got really scared. Because he, like, remembered and snapped his mask right back up. Like, it was almost like he zipped his jacket down, felt the freezing cold wind, and said, nope, and zipped it right back up and turned around the other way. It was perfect. Just because, yeah, because, you know, it's just instinct. You're trying to be heard. You need to, like, shout instruction, and it's through this kind of muffled thing. Nobody wants that.
What's interesting to me is of the guys that got fined, it was only one of the play callers who's got the mic right up on his lips in Kyle Shanahan. I would think, you know, he, a week before that, Sean McVay was really bad at it. Like those types of guys who are talking to their quarterbacks until the last possible second and it's all muffled as you're talking about. Pete Carroll, he's yelling and motivating and clapping and chomping on gum, but he's not calling plays. I don't think Vic Fangio calls Denver's defense. He's a great defensive coordinator for a long time. But I don't know. I mean, it's not like they're not doing anything or talking to people during the game. I understand that they have obligations and things to do and that it's annoying to wear the mask. I'm not saying that it isn't. But if you would have told me three guys got in trouble, I would have thought like Andy Reid, who's got to wear this right. whole rigged deal. I mean, these guys that actually call the plays and are on mic to their quarterbacks, they're the ones that I would think that the mask is hardest for.
100%. I mean, I can't tell you. So we're going to start a sort of modified soccer season where I'm coaching kids, right?
The Wolfpack?
Outside. Yeah, we're gonna end up having a season, right? We're gonna have to go play in Maryland, but we're gonna get together and play a season. The rules are very restrictive, and I get it. They should be. No problem adhering to it. So we've got like a meeting that I've got to go to virtually, and then like I've got to make sure all these different health things are met. But trying to coach just even kids through that mask is a giant pain in the butt. It just is.
Danny, you're burying the lead. The Wolfpack is back.
The Wolfpack rides again.
Holy shnikes.
Yeah.
So feel free to tell me I'm an idiot with this question, okay? Is it worth it to you to do this?
100%. I mean,
there are 100%. So many like variables and things you've got to follow, and there's probably so much red tape now, and then there's the pressure of someone getting sick and a parent being mad at you. Is that worth it?
Yes. Anything. The children need to be outside. The children need to be with other children. People who don't have this age group of kids, like if your kids are older, like 10, 11, 12, you're kind of going, oh, he's annoying at home sometimes. He's crabby. Or if you have like a baby, toddler,
crabby.
Whatever,
I'm
you're
sure.
like, well, we could still get him out for walks. It's still nice. If you have a school age child somewhere between kindergarten and fourth grade, you understand. If you don't, you don't. And you're probably going, what's Danny talking about? Desperate.
No, I can relate to that.
Desperation to have this child. It's every day he's not in school. It's a massive setback. We have no idea the developmental repercussions of this. I understand why we're here. I get it. And everyone's yelling at me, telling me that I'm Eric Bickle Jr. or some other kind of stuff. I'm not. Just worried about my kids. Worried about everybody's kids. I'm simply saying he needs to be out of the house. And he needs to be with other children all the time to make up for these months and months and months where he has regressed developmentally in such a huge way. So, yes, everything is worth it. Everything is worth it.
Totally get it, and I understand what you're saying. I mean, with the president, who's, I think, right around 18 months now, I think she'll be 18 months in a day or a couple days, people that don't have babies or kids in the house don't understand some of the wants and issues that you have with the inability to do things. And it doesn't mean it. I'm not Grant Mickle in this thing, but you either get it or you don't. And each person's life is a little bit different, and each person has different things going on. And I'm not going to tell you how to live your life or what you should be doing. But people who have children, they understand this, I think, a little bit differently than someone who may not. So I get it totally. Good luck to the Wolfpack.
Yeah, thank you. We need it. And again, it's the protocols are in place, and they should be. We've had a couple families who opted out. Of course, whatever you're comfortable with. I mean, the kids are going to have to get used to, you know, this masked up world, and they got to do that. And you know, I have to set up all these cones before the games where each kid has their own labeled cone where their stuff is, where their parents have to be. I mean, like the parents, it's hardest to enforce on them. These are grown adults. But if we want to have games, they're going to be policing this sort of stuff, right? Where someone's going to come by, and if parents are just standing next to each other, like masked down, like Pete Carroll chomping his gum, just chatting, they'll shut it down. I mean, they are taking this really, really seriously, and that's good. But I'm going to be a stickler for the rules, and everyone's going to hate me by the end of the season. But I'm so desperate to have these children out of the house that we'll do it. I'll do whatever.
He's Danny. I'm Grant. You're listening to 106.7 The Fan, your flagship home for Wolfpack Soccer. You can hear all of their games.
Wolfpack right Soccer. Here. What if we should get Pete Metters to do it, by the way.
What if me and Pete went and called all the Wolfpack games this year? That would be
That'd be amazing. That would be amazing. That'd be a great bit.
I think I might text CK to see if we could call a Wolfpack game at some point on a weekend. I think that would get big ratings. Next hour at 11:30, Brian Baldinger scheduled to join us to go around the NFL. We'll get his thoughts on some of the big surprises and disappointments through 2 weeks. Next, we'll revisit our Survivor and our confidence point picks to see how we did. Guys, Grant Paulson for my friends at EMP 180 Weight Loss. They have made my life better and the lives of my siblings and family better and thousands of our listeners. That's right, plural, thousands. You don't know how many people from 106.7 The Fan listenership have called over there, maybe skeptical at first, found out, wow, this is legit, and then gone in, started to meet, get consultations, and started to drop the weight. Because they've realized, like I did, that it's now or never time, that you got to make this decision. Dining out or takeout, EMP coaches can help you make choices. They can go through menus with you. They can teach you how to be as healthy as possible with your lifestyle. They're going to teach you about nutrition and how foods with the highest sugars and the different names for sugar that kind of hide on the nutrition labels. They're going to help you be smarter about food than you've ever been, and that's kind of the name of the game. Get fit before the holidays. Call EMP 180 today for their specially priced 6-week, 6-pack weight loss and wellness pack. Call 855-888-0180. Thank you.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.